Hello, grandkids, and welcome to Stunt Granny Audio 771. This is Kevin DeFrango. On the other end is Chris Calamita. What is up, good sir?
Not a heck of a lot, Kevin. How about yourself?
Well, I am enjoying the sunroom door open, so if you happen to hear crickets during this podcast, that is a good reason why. Yeah, kind of enjoying a nice night cool breeze here. Enjoying a frosty beverage as normal, and ready for this week has been a nice mix-up. Jeremy on Tuesday, you on Thursday. Hey, we get to talk about some different stuff for a change. How does that feel to go NXT and AEW?
Oh, it feels wonderful, Kevin. Looking forward to take your vacation in 2 weeks, but I get to have the NXT conversations with old Jeremy. Again, I don't love NXT 2.0, especially at the current moment, but it's almost been a year. We'll get into it, but it's not worth crying. It's not worth being that upset about.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it. I hadn't thought about how much of a time frame that had been, but we really are closing in on a year because when was the War Games?
Well, it was like announced in like. War Games they did. Well, no. NXT 2.0 did the War Games where they.
Right.
The Black and Gold versus 2.0.
Yeah, because they had been around long enough to.
The switch had happened in September, and it was like right after Triple H had his heart attack. But the switch, the wheels were already in motion. Probably by about August, that they were gonna just make over NXT, and we're here.
Yeah. Well, and he reacted to something while we were recording the Tuesday show there. The new names for, and I can't even remember the names, but the two guys that are with Joe Gacy now.
Oh, yeah, the former Grizzled Young Veterans.
Yes.
I can't remember their, I can't remember their new names, but I'm also struggling to remember their old names, too.
Well, the one was
James Drake and
Zach Gibson.
James Drake. Zach Gibson, okay, yes.
Yep.
I would not have, I don't know if I would have remembered Zach Gibson without you. So, I mean, that change does not bother me too much. I mean, they're not great names. Even if you're going for some spooky cult names, they're still not good names.
Yeah, like, the one name, and I guess I have that pulled up so I can get to it here. The one name I was just like, oh, that's okay. And the other one I was just like, eh. And I can't remember which is which. Jagger, I mean, Reed, like and Rip Fowler.
Yeah, I mean, what? I mean, at least go with like serial killer references to go with Joe Gacy.
Yeah, these don't quite seem in the right pocket with Joe Gacy,
Bundy, Menendez, or Ramirez, or something. Just go if we're gonna go with a motif. Go all the way with it. like old Tony D and his associates do.
Oh, yeah.
His that one original associate.
And his two oddly hanging on associates that weren't his associates. But that storyline has gone all wonky, too. But anywho, yeah, I do think that Jagger Reed has a, kind of a decent ring to it. Rip Fowler just kind of seems blah to me.
Yeah.
So, yeah, not the worst names that NXT's come up with, but, yeah. They're not good, though, either.
No.
So, anywho. Yeah, there's gonna be plenty for. I try to defend NXT with him, but he doesn't really have it for the most part, which is hilarious. I do kind of get a chuckle out of it because honestly, at this point, they have done a good enough job with it. Like, for being what it's supposed to be, like, I feel like there are some wrestlers that are starting to stand out that have been there, like you said, most of that past year.
But they are still, it's an interest, if you look at it as just an interesting experiment, you know, and just throwing new stuff at the wall, and changing things frequently, and this is all happening on the USA Network in 2 hours in prime time. I mean, you've had things like the people who look like we're going to be the cornerstones of some folks that look like they're going to be the cornerstones of NXT 2.0. Like, let's, for example, Grayson Waller just had the rug pulled under his push a while back, and it's just, you know, so just look at it like, and we'll go into more detail later of the actual show, but I still think it's interesting to follow, if it's not always the most interesting thing to watch. And it's just ridiculous to think that the NXT Black and Gold of 2019-2020 was the same as the NXT Black and Gold of 2017-2018. Because it was not. We saw everything there was to see there, and there really wasn't anything left.
Yeah, there's plenty for them to still get into. Pretty much everyone on that roster, which is it's kind of fun. Like, I still think that it's still. I guess I feel like they still need a little more of a mix of veterans if they really want to kind of help the kids out a little bit more than they have. But I'm still okay with what they're doing. Like, just throwing them all on TV. Some things you're going to hit, some things aren't. I mean, you do bring up an interesting one. Grayson Waller is kind of in a weird... That's one where I'm like, I don't understand what he's done wrong to get the deep push. Like, he is one of those characters that is super, like... He is just genuinely annoying.
Yes, he very much is. He's very much so, and he might have go away heat with some people. He doesn't bother me to that degree. I don't necessarily know if he's a WrestleMania main eventer in waiting. But then again, I thought felt the same way about Austin Theory, and we may be charging through with that. So who knows? But yeah, no, it's just weird that he was getting all this shine. He got to have he got credit for, you know, running off Johnny Gargano. He got credit for running off LA Knight. He got credit for, you know, he was in that mix, and then it just stopped.
Yeah, and he's just wrestled matches here and there, and I feel like he's mostly gotten wins in them, but it's also a weird spot to be in when you're, not pushed. Like, he's just, like, popping up every now and again and being annoying still.
They've got Bron Breakker and just really three kind of weird feuds in a row that haven't necessarily put him in the best light. The spooky stuff with Gacy didn't really fit his character, and the matches weren't going to be anything special. With Cameron Grimes, there really was no story to it, no great story to it. You know, you're gonna have a pretty good match with Cameron Grimes regardless, but
right.
Grimes doing this half-hearted heel turn and then just walking it back, the next week, that was kind of silly. And of course, old Blockhead. Now, I will never buy into that guy.
Blockhead?
The Have you seen the size of that man's melon? Come on now. It's not even a melon. It's just square.
Oh, man.
I guess we're starting off with NXT 2.0, so we might as well just keep going with it.
I'm always fine with things not going the direction they were supposed to, as long as it's a good conversation, and it was. So
we did have about 30 seconds of prep for this show, that and then threw it all the way after we started recording. All right.
Immediately after doing so.
Let's see, because
I mean, Jeremy and I had some reactions, but I did get a more proper chance. I had watched the first hour before we recorded without any interruptions, but I did kind of go back and watch everything a little bit more thoroughly afterwards. So I do feel a little bit more filled in to talk about the show now.
Yeah.
But let's
go with it. What did you think about Cora Jade's big heel coming out promo? That was really the biggest thing on the show.
It was everyone genuinely seems to like Roxanne Perez. I think it's, to me, they didn't have, this is one of those situations where if they had built up their friendship over, like, it's one thing to say, hey, we've been friends the whole time, we trained together, and, you know, did all this stuff together. That's great if they really did that. They were together for, like, a month on TV. And,
yes.
To me, I always need a little more investment in that breakup than a month. Like, if they had been at least a team for 2 months, and I feel like 2 months is just scraping by, I'd be for it.
It came too quickly. I don't know if there's other factors at play here, as far as, you know, they need to speed up storylines in NXT because some people might be coming up after SummerSlam or something or something of the sorts. It was definitely too quick. We'll be talking probably about another situation later of telling us about some great friendship and that, but not really showing it to the level that they need to when we get to AEW. But for this situation, yes. For this situation, 4 weeks was not enough. I mean, they did what they could do. If you watch some of the other types of shows, the YouTube videos, they do get into more detail of Cora and Roxanne's past and in Roxanne's breakout tournament, you know, video. They did mention that Cora Jade's her best friend, and, you know, how close they were on the Indies. Yeah. So they did do something. So maybe it's a little more than 4 weeks. Maybe about 7 or 8, because that would take you back to the very beginning of the breakout tournament.
Yeah.
But yeah, no. As far as them teaming, they very quickly had one tag team match together before they got the tag title shot. Beating Kaden and Katana, who, you know, of course everyone beats, and then and then they got their shot at Toxic Attraction, and, you know, won that match. It felt like a big moment. It felt earned. The old WWE Performance Center. I don't know if we're still calling it the Capitol Wrestling Center.
I believe it is.
But the CWC audience has had a interesting relationship with Cora Jade. many members of the regular members of the audience never letting her forget about that one time she nearly slipped off her skateboard.
Oh, yeah. It's always kind of interesting. The NXT audience has been pretty weird in that department, where I feel like there's been a number of turns that have happened simply because the NXT audience is blowing that way. Like Cameron Grimes, the aforementioned Cameron Grimes, was in that category where, like, he's telling this heartwarming story about winning the title for his dad, and then people are just booing him 2 weeks later. It's just like, huh? Like, how'd this happen?
Yeah, no.
And
they're simply not it's not a good crowd. There's so few of them. Anything any one person says or a 10 person says is going to get picked. 10 people say, you know, that's going to get picked up by the microphone. I'm still kind of shocked that a show that looks like that in that small of a building, it airs on the USA Network. At least, you know, the 2.0 transition at least, you know, brightened the place up a bit, because it was very, very black in the Triple H era. But yeah, it still just doesn't look like something that a wrestling product that belongs on global television.
I still think it's better than ROH, so I'm not going to argue too much.
No. ROH always look like crap. The only event that ever didn't look like crap from ROH was the last one, or the first one under the Tony Khan regimes.
I wouldn't mind seeing them do more venues, even if they stayed kind of local. I think that would be kind of fun to stay within the Florida area and kind of get a little more vibe and a little more real crowd reaction for, you know, I mean, if that's supposed to be part of it, and especially the way that they've been touring with the main WWE roster hitting smaller towns again, you know, it seems like that'd be a good experience anyway if they would record in front of, you know, different audiences. You can find those, like, the AEW-sized arenas, if not, like, I know that NXT usually ran a place that held about 3,000 here in Columbus. You could still record at a place like that. The CWC isn't any better than recording at, and I can't even think of what the name of it is now.
Lifestyle
Pavilion. Is it Lifestyle Pavilion? I'm trying to think of the place here in town that NXT usually runs for, because they usually run it right before or during the Arnold Classic, at least. And just have them do those types
of... Those days are gone.
I think it would just help their product and their wrestlers more. Even, like I said, even if they kind of limited it to the Florida area or just kind of nearby Orlando, yeah. I think that would be a real benefit.
At this point, NXT is not doing 3,000 people. Probably not 2,000. Some WWE house shows have struggled with 2,000 or 3,000, although that they've been doing better than that lately as well. It's hard to find a good venue. Maybe 500 to 1,000 people would be probably more realistic. It's still hard to find a good looking venue, because you still don't want to be in a high school gym or, you know, a VFW hall on USA. I mean, they've done up their performance center as good as they can with that. I mean, we're talking a long way just to basically say the regular CWC audience.
Oh,
they're kind of assholes.
They're very.
they do not. They're very fickle.
Yes,
they're there every week, and very much an impress me attitude. Yeah, and for what she was supposed to be, Cora Jade never connected with the live audience. The only live audience she has to connect with, really. And maybe that's too bad.
Yeah, they definitely positioned her as a babyface. I feel like she was doing okay, but not great. I still think it's one of those things, I kind of harped on it about her gimmick to start with, like as far as I know, I'm assuming that she isn't. Knowing the fact that she at some point dated Darby Allin, correct?
No.
Didn't she have some history with
him? No, they had a Twitter spat. That was about it. No. And remember, she just turned 21 years old. She's very young.
yeah. Okay. Well, anywho, the skateboard gimmick didn't seem like it fit her. You know, like,
no,
it was always, I always said that she felt like someone who was a, in my day called a poser. Like, they dressed like someone that skateboarded, but they didn't really skateboard at all. It never to me came across as genuine.
No, and she had a long time to learn how to go down that such very, very short incline and not lose her balance.
On a long board nonetheless, which should be even easier to do.
It wasn't great, but she had her moment. She is young, she looks young, she should have been a key to getting a younger audience. Maybe she still could be. Once again, so young, very inexperienced. I mean, it's not like she was 5 years into her independent career when they signed her either. No. She's one of the last people among the last people getting signed that way. She was not polished when they signed her. I mean, almost none of these people are that polished. That is the thing about NXT 2.0.
And I guess the promo itself, I guess because I didn't like her character previously, I'm kind of in for a character change here. And
yeah,
I was also thinking that because they have pushed her as much as they have in the past, that they can, like, there is no protection between the champion, like Mandy Rose. Like, there's no one that you need to go through to get to Mandy Rose. Like, you can have the other two, Gigi Dolan and JC Jane, take some losses if you want to go that route. There isn't really, like, any path to get up to her, though. And I feel like Cora Jade can kind of fill that void if they do things right.
Yeah. And I don't think Mandy Rose and Toxic Attraction are long for NXT at this point. I mean, they are arguably Mandy Rose has already been NXT maybe too long. I don't know if I want it to be Zoe Stark, who's never done anything for me in any way, but it might end up being Zoe Stark.
Yeah, I mean, the WWE definitely seems high on her. I guess I'm more optimistic than both you and Jeremy about her, but she's still, like, yeah, I felt like the segments with her and Io could have been more entertaining than they were. And I'm not necessarily sure that it was all her fault that those things tanked. And maybe it was mainly a material problem. Yeah. It's...
Yeah, I don't think it was... I certainly don't think it was more EO. I think EO was a... I think EO was game for them. Yeah, Zoe Stark just... She just has nothing going for it to me. I'm not going to throw myself on the sword for how to call NXT 2.0 great right now. I do feel like NXT 2.0 it's certainly had some issues. It's really had some issues since they did the Ziggler title switch. I think that really hurt NXT's momentum. It hurt Braun Breaker's momentum.
Oh. Yeah, now, Breaker has not really bounced back since then.
No, and as I mentioned earlier, he's been put in some lame feuds. I know Mandy Rose's title reign came after. Well, I guess it came after Raquel, which wasn't exactly a great title reign. But it did follow. But Raquel's title reign did follow EO's. And Io Shirai, the quality of women's wrestling in NXT was always incredibly high. Even when I was over the men's stuff with Gargano and Cole and Ciampa basically having the same matches over and over again, the women's division I would say it every week. The NXT women's division was my favorite thing in wrestling until about 2 years ago. Maybe a little longer than that because I did like a lot of EO's title matches.
Oh.
So.
Fair enough.
Once again, the standard of wrestling in NXT's women's division was incredibly high because of all that time Triple H spent hoarding everybody. And now Mandy Rose is good. She can be very good, but she's not Io Shirai. She's not Asuka. She's not Ember Moon. She's not Dana Baszler. No, she's not at that level.
As much as I'm okay with the gimmick of the character being over more, it almost seems like they've protected her too much. It still, as much as Wade Barrett hypes up, because isn't she the longest NXT Women's Champion of all time now?
No. Asuka held it for almost 2 years. She's still third or fourth. I mean, Shayna held it longer, and I still think maybe EO still was
a little bit longer.
Held it longer still at this point.
Okay,
a little bit longer.
It's still been a long title reign. I know that it's at least been over 200 days at this point, and sometimes I struggle to remember who her opponents were.
Yeah, no. It's from an in-ring perspective, it's not been this great title reign. No, and it is more her and Hacking Distraction really are more of a main roster act. You could have them anytime interrupt a Bianca Belair promo on Raw or a Liv Morgan promo on SmackDown and confront her and beat her down 3-on-1. Either of them, and start a feud that way. You can get tag matches, six woman tags out of it, and bleeding to the title match. Yeah, I mean, absolutely. It's what they should do, probably will do. But in the meantime, not excited about the possibility that the person who's finally going to be Mandy Rose is Zoe Stark. I mean, I guess if you wanted to do it this way, Zoe Stark beats Mandy Rose, Cora Jade beats Zoe Stark, Roxanne beats Cora Jade, but you'd have to do that very quickly in succession. And they seem to like long title reigns in that NXT Women's Division, but then again, it's NXT 2.0. Who cares? Who knows? Maybe they would want to do something a little more. Have a little more frequent title changes.
You really could hot potato that thing if you want to. I'm not sure that it's going to do Anyone any favors? Like, I'm just trying to think of, yeah, because, I mean, if Zoe Stark's title reign is short, that's not really a good thing. If Cora Jade had a short title reign because of the circumstances, you could understand that happening. And then, well, Roxanne Perez doesn't necessarily need to have a short title reign then, since she's at the end of the line.
No. I mean, yeah. Cora and Roxanne certainly need more time, I think.
Oh.
Or maybe you just put, or maybe people are just benefiting from just going up to the main roster and being thrown to the Sharks. That's a possible theory too, though it doesn't exactly make NXT and their performance center look that great in the grand scheme of things.
There's still some work to be done down there for sure. Although, I mean, some of the other women are starting to come into focus. What are your thoughts on Tiffany Stratton as an example?
She's a natural. She has gotten really, really good in a very short period of time. She's the antithesis of several of these women, particularly Nikita, Lash Legend, who don't seem like they're picking it up that strong, that quickly. You know, Tiffany Stratton never wrestled anywhere a day in her life before being picked up by and put into the performance center. You know, obviously she's a great athlete, but she's picking up on things in wrestling. I mean, they did go for her. You know, she took from, I believe, Zoe Stark the German suplex where you land on your, do the full flip and land on your face.
Oh,
she took that perfect. She took that like a vet. I mean, she is picking this stuff up very quickly. You know, they've tinkered with the gimmick a little bit. She doesn't mention daddy as much anymore, if at all, in the last few weeks. So they're tinkering with it. Yeah, she's definitely, obviously they're going to be high on her. And from an in-ring perspective, she's not, you know, she's keeping up. If she's not overachieving for the actual amount of ring time she has.
Yeah, I've really liked the gimmick has really rounded the corner for me. But yeah, her in-ring stuff has been pretty solid, given, you know, as we've kind of mentioned with everyone there, pretty much the universal lack of experience.
Yeah. And then there's poor Indy Hartwell, who seems like she's just regressing. God, that match last week with Lash Legend. People are calling that the worst match of the year. I'm not sure, 100% sure about that, but it was pretty bad.
It definitely was not good.
It was not good. And honestly, yeah, Lash Legend is an athlete, but not picking up the finer points of wrestling. But Indy Hartwell was supposed to be something of a veteran. And it felt like she was learning. She was doing really well, especially as Candice LeRae's partner, as maybe people listen to this know, who, you know, Candice LeRae with Johnny Gargano co-ran the AIW school.
She's kind of running it again?
She might be, I don't know.
They had a post where they at least brought them back to run a training session.
Well, that's good. They should do that. And, you know, because my point I was making is that when Indy Hartwell was teaming with Candice LeRae, she was absolutely improving. She was showing what she was doing was, because she's about 5'10 or so, she was doing big boots and starting to integrate more power spots into her, and power moves into her repertoire. And she kept that through her team with Persia Parada, who was all the now former Persia Parada, you know, who was also another, you know, tall, fit woman who, you know, was doing more power moves.
Yeah.
But since being back on her own, Indy seems like she's back to trying to do tall, lanky, high flying, and that just does not work for her.
Yeah, that her style, and I don't know, I guess I'd have to pay a little more attention, I suppose, to how the style has changed, but it still didn't look like she was going for the big boot that eliminated her in that that battle royal there.
She did use the big boot. She's good at that big boot. That needs to be a calling card in a lot of her matches.
Yeah,
she needs to stay away from springboards. Springboard, trying to do springboard elbow drops or what have you.
It's like one of those things that it almost feels like it's mandatory these days to have some type of splash move.
Yeah. Wrestlers need to stop that. It's not a sin. It's not a sin to grab a headlock every once in a while.
Yeah, there's some good things about maybe not putting in a splash move. See Orton, Randy. Or just finishing your matches with the year only splash move and going from there. Yeah, she has not done that great. Like, that's one of those ones that, like you said, like, it's a little bit surprising given that she is, in relative terms, a veteran on that roster. Even if she isn't really a veteran type of situation. Trying to think of... I guess I did like... we've kind of talked around it. I was kind of amused at how the end of that battle royal came around with Cora Jade snaking out early and then still failing when she came back in to get Zoe Stark. Like, that's one of those tropes that has happened so often in wrestling. I'm glad that it was subverted somewhat in that situation.
I totally forgot Cora Jade had never actually been eliminated. Yes, so no, that was done well. I mean, I think the best one of those was, even though it's universally considered one of the worst rumbles, Rusev in the rumble that Royal Rumble that Roman Reigns won. Just popping up out of nowhere after Roman Reigns already thought he won. That was probably the best one, but this was all right. I mean, seeing Cora Jade running from the distance, on that hard camera shot, that was well done. Once again, the battle royal was fine in most spots. You know, once again, a lot of green and inexperienced women in it.
Yeah.
But mostly, though, they were eliminated quickly and simply. The whole Ivy Nile thing with Tatum Paxley, I will never think it's smart or any kind of good creative to have someone eliminate themselves from a battle royal like the way Tatum Paxley did. She could have gone for a suicide dive through the top of middle ropes and still been in the match.
Yeah, accomplish the same goal with a non-elimination. Yeah, I kind of get what they were trying to draw there as far as her being all in on Ivy Nile and kind of being part of Diamond Mind. Yeah, there are better ways to do that without you looking like a complete dumbass.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Yep, those things do happen. But yeah, that was one of those things that I guess I just didn't want to forget to talk about within all of the ladies talk there that we've had for NXT 2.0 here. Cuz yeah, it kind of was I mean, we did have a debut this week. Axiom is on. Evidently, this is the old A-Kid. I wouldn't have known if someone didn't tell me. Because there's a mask on the person, and I wasn't really familiar with A-Kid either. Anything to take from his debut?
Nothing too much. It was pretty standard. I mean, the entrance was entrance was cool, so that's certainly something that they're going to hang this character's hat on. And it's gonna, match was fine.
When you have 3 minutes match, there's not a whole lot that you can really get into, honestly. UK tag team titles, Briggs and Jensen end up beating Pretty Deadly to retain their titles.
I could not care less. I'm not a Pretty Deadly fan of this. I know other people are into it. I'm not really into either. I'm not really into either act, to be honest.
I guess I'm okay. Like, I think Briggs and Jensen are doing the best that they can with that gimmick. And Pretty Deadly cracks me up. Like, that's definitely one that they're in that several acts to me have found that very annoying bone, and they're kind of in that category where they're just kind of their smugness and their outfits do a good job of telling a story for me. So, but yeah, what the match itself was just kind of a whatever. And I guess we did talk a little Diamond Mine. It was a little strange that Roderick Strong used his one team being beat up as a learning moment for Damon Kemp. Like, I thought that was kind of an interesting angle that they worked there. Kind of a little two for one, especially due to the fact that it was the Creeds being beat down who already have something of a beef with Roderick Strong.
Yeah, no, I mean, Diamond Mine is basically falling apart, almost making a storyline out of the idea that Roderick Strong really doesn't belong in NXT anymore. And there's just nothing. He doesn't fit anymore. He doesn't seem like he wants to be there. So that's all well and good. I could see him taking off as soon as his contract's over. And I don't know about AEW, but maybe the ROH part of it would fit him well in the twilight of his career. Seems like there's just guys who just still want to wrestle on a regular basis and be featured, and they're not ready. Now, you know, people can say that, well, NXT 2.0 needs veterans to teach the young guys. It just seems like there's not people who want to do that. They've still got it in their heads. You know, your Ciampas, Garganos, Strongs, they still got it in their heads that they want to be wrestling regularly and featured. And do the kind of matches that they like doing. So, yeah, no, there's, you know, no one wants to be a player coach because you have to admit that your prime productive years are over. And no one in wrestling ever wants to do that. So just saying that someone should be a player coach and they should have more veterans on the roster isn't as easy as that.
Oh, yeah. Right now, honestly, I'm thinking of an actual work parallel that I am not going to get into on this recording. But let's just say there's a problem at middle management. I will leave it there. And, yeah, it's not even like they're putting... To me, it's the strange thing that they have Strong under contract. They're not putting him into that position, though, to be a player coach, really. It's kind of like this match with Damon Kemp might be the first kind of player coach match that he's really had.
Yeah.
So it's kind of strange. Like, they could still book him that way, but they haven't at all. Like, I don't know if he's balked at all of the ideas considering who is running the shows, though, now, it seems like that would not be tolerated.
Yeah, no, I don't think that. I don't think he's balking at anything. I mean, he's not doing the player-coach thing, but he's also not really being featured either. He's in a weird place. I mean, ever since Stokely Hathaway left, this whole Diamond Mine idea has been very, very, very much in limbo. The Crees really don't meet Damon Kemp. I don't know if he's got. I don't know what really strong potential he has. The Crees definitely do. I mean, the Crees doing their Steiner Brothers tribute spots. There's always a place in tag team wrestling for a team like that. So. I also don't know if they necessarily need a strong, leading them around by the nose. Ivy Nile's about to go off under her own thing with Tatum Paxley. If they get, new women's tag team champions up and running. The whole story with Tony and D'Angelo's crew has been that, that they are, coming together. More.
Oh.
So yeah. I imagine they're going to win that match next week.
I would think so too.
The final breakup of Dynamite takes place.
There is potential there. Who knows though? At that point, I really don't know what you do with Roderick Strong.
Nah, I mean, I think he ends. I don't know. I don't know how long his contracts goes, but yeah, he's definitely not sticking around.
No. He is regretting pretty much every moment that he put ink to paper with that contract, since he was like the first one to re-sign in the Undisputed Era. Group and
he's the only one who re-signed. Not really good times for Mr. Strong. Just like there weren't very, very good times since we're nearly about 50 minutes into the show, we haven't even gotten into AEW yet. Not good times for me watching that main event
on AEW Dynamite.
Correct, yes.
Just so we're clear that we're transitioning finally over the other show that we were going to start with.
Yeah, that main event, talk about something that didn't do anything for me. First of all, AEW has gone to the well too many times trying to put a bloody violent match on free TV. That's very apparent. We've hit diminishing returns with that.
Yeah.
And then the entire booking of the actual match itself, especially we thought we hit the home stretch, and then it just kept going. Poor Ruby Soho. I know they're saying that she has a broken hand, but that's not that serious enough injury. She was getting her ass handed to her, and it was basically a fair fight with Tegati.
That's one of those ones where how many years, and obviously it's way different eras, that Bob Orton wrestled with a cast on, and they're not even trying to sell something like Ruby Soho hitting. Like, even if she wears a fake cast that night, why not do that gimmick and have her be able to fight back?
Yeah, no. We can't have Ruby Soho looking strong. We gotta have her get beat up by Anna Jay too. Which I'm not against Anna Jay and Tay Conti being back together, but back together under the Jericho Appreciation Society banner. That already has so many members. To put them in their own, the whole thing with four people being in a Shark Tank together. That was started this thing silly to begin with. And then of course the key wouldn't work. The key to the door wouldn't work. So they had to start squeezing through the bars. Thankfully they got it open. Otherwise Hager never would have gotten out. Although maybe that wouldn't have been so thankfully. Then, you know, of course, the match, the rest of the Blackpool Combat Club, along with Santana and Ortiz, get involved. Then it looks like we're about to have, okay, finally, the big final win for Eddie Kingston over Chris Jericho. And then out comes Sammy Guevara. And I don't know if it was miscommunication or the lack of time they had left. Everything here just looked like crap. I mean, they were not on the same.
Yeah, I remember looking at the Dipsy Doodle and just going, what is going on here with Jericho and Guevara not really knowing where each other was supposed to be in the ring at one moment? Is just like,
yeah,
oh, this is not good, guys. Especially between two guys, you know, it's one thing when you're going, oh, it's these young people in NXT that barely have any experience. When one guy has like 20 plus years of experience and the other guy...
Over 30.
Oh, no, Jesus.
No, you meant Kingston first.
No, not Kingston, because Kingston wasn't... Kingston wasn't involved in... I'm trying to think of what went wrong on his part, because it was mostly... I'm mostly talking about Guevara and Jericho having their little mix-up when they're... I don't know if they're supposed to attack Kingston. Yeah, I have no idea what's supposed to be going on between Jericho and Guevara. And Kingston was just kind of waiting there. It seemed like he was supposed to either duck some offense or do something in order to get the upper hand on Jericho. But because Jericho and Guevara were mixed up, it made everyone look bad. And yeah, so not surprising when it's youngsters. When it's these old people screwing up, It's kind of rough.
Yeah, the whole thing was rough. There's no reason for Jericho to win that match, and then cancel out Jericho winning that match with the stunt bump afterward into the spider web of barbed wire, which meant nothing because they were both already cut up, you know, pretty badly. So that little bit of scratching and scarring from that barbed wire that didn't really have that, wasn't really a great visual. AEW has not been the best with their stump bump visuals, you know, obviously. You know, obviously there's been so many incidents of obvious crash pads, just oversized tables that aren't supposed to be there and things of that nature that wouldn't otherwise be there. It's
their stunt bumps are just a dumpster fire for the most part. And actually, that was one that...
Yeah. I wanted Darby Allin, who's willing to fall 25 feet to the floor. And just splat.
Yeah.
Or fall down a flight of stairs.
Yeah, I no flack given to one Mr. Allen in the bump department. Outside of him, though, things get pretty questionable pretty quickly. And yeah. The Jericho one really wasn't too bad. It just, like you said, it just seemed a little bit pointless. I know that Eddie Kingston wanted his blood, and that in some ways that was more important than actually winning the match. But, like, what else could he have... Like, that was the other thing. It was one of those matches where everyone hit finishers almost multiple times. And it's just like, oh, why is this happening? You know, yeah, like
it's just it was not a good match. It was even by the standards of this type of deal, it wasn't good. AEW, I think, needs to put a moratorium on these violent matches, maybe just blood in general for a while. They've lost all their meaning. There was really no reason to keep this thing going after Blood and Guts. You know, this feud started with Eddie Kingston beating Jericho clean in the middle of the ring at Revolution. So it's not like we're trying to prove that Eddie Kingston can beat Chris Jericho. And then, you know, the silliness of the whole Ruby Soho thing. To talk about, you know, we're being told this long history between two people, but we haven't really seen it, come to fruition in front of our eyes or see it really, you know. Yeah, so, you know, that leaves you hollow. Of course, you know, everything that they've done with Ruby Soho has been pretty hollow. You know, I guess this feud's still going. I mean, the silliness I was mentioned earlier, the car thing where she just placed her hand there and then got shut with nothing holding it there. It was all, everything they've done since Blood and Guts has just been really, just really bad and just really just desperately trying to keep this thing going when there's nothing to keep going. And, you know, what are you, you've done War Games in a barbed wire match. What the hell's going to be next? Yeah, next is probably going to be a straight wrestling match, yeah. And then we'll be right back to where we started with Eddie Kingston beating Chris Jericho, even though he's already done that.
Their storyline arcs are a little wacky sometimes.
No, they're not really good at them unless it's, you know, well, Punk and MJF, which I imagine Punk probably had a lot of say in, you know, how that all went down, or, you know, MJF and Wardlow, although that got overshadowed by all the BS with MJF, and yeah. AEW is not firing at all cylinders. You know, we talk about WWE, but AEW is not creatively doing well right now. To me, there doesn't seem to be a lot of focus. There's going into a number of different directions. They have, you know, the ROH pay per view, which is really just a distraction. To the main plot of trying to get AEW to All Out, which I don't. Unless Punk can come back for that Moxley match, I don't know what they do at All Out. They better cross their fingers that Punk's ready.
Yeah, the injuries have hurt AEW more than it's hurt.
They definitely have.
It's definitely screwed up plans for mostly for the main event of the WWE. They haven't had as many the WWE hasn't had as many injuries affect the lower card stuff, but AEW doesn't have still, as much as I've kind of joked about it, they don't have as much stratification as the WWE does, and yeah, the injuries have still kind of hurt them more, especially since I feel like the total is a little bit higher in AEW than even the WWE, which is fairly impressive. Although it does seem like, I do think that Kenny Omega will help things out in general, and it seems like he's ready to come back soon-ish from the way things, I feel like Scuttlebutt is on the interwebs is falling here.
Yeah. It seems like the talk is that Kenny Omega will be back soon, and I think obviously Omega versus Punk is the biggest thing that they could do in the next 6 months or so. About 6 months. If they target that for the main event of Full Gear, yeah, you could. You know, you have a pretty big pay per view there. Actually, what I would do with the first Punk versus Omega match is I'd book Toronto. You know, with taking advantage of Kenny being Canadian. I mean, he's from Winnipeg, but you know, Winnipeg's not exactly an A city to have a pay per view. So you know, go to Toronto with it. I mean, make that AEW's Canadian debut.
Yeah, that could work out pretty nicely. I guess other things on the show, speaking about bad bumps that we talked about there with and people that are willing to take crazy bumps. Darby Allin took one of the most ridiculous bumps ever, and that is saying quite a lot considering that it's Darby Allin. That finisher that Brody King put on him looked bonkers. Like, if Darby Allin shows up next week, God bless him. Like, that thing looked brutal.
Oh, yeah, it did. Yes. Oh, yeah. And the fact that they basically did that match as a glorified, it really was a glorified squash. I mean, Allin got some stuff in, but no, I mean, they've done a pretty good job lately with Brody King, so, you know, that's good. You know, having Sting and Malakai Black interact, some good stuff there. You could definitely get a tag match out of that, you know, in the not-too-distant future.
Yeah.
You know, obviously, there'll be a tag match, because they have not booked Sting in any singles matches this entire AEW run, and it's probably a good idea, even though the old Stinger has taken a liking to the old balcony dive, which is absolutely insane.
Yeah, that's been kind of funny.
You get a tag match out of that.
Yeah,
it seems like we're moving toward. I mean, that was actually that sequence may have been my favorite part of the show, because especially with the arrival of, I guess, possibly new babyface Miro to also feud with Malakai Black. That's intriguing. That was well done.
Yeah, I guess I was going to ask what you thought of. I was kind of interested to see if there's some story behind. It seemed like Miro had an eye patch on the left eye.
Yeah, he took the mist at Forbidden Door.
Oh, I forgot about that. So, okay, yeah, nice sell job. And, yeah, I kind of like the hype. It is one of those things that it feels like Malakai Black keeps on getting himself involved in two feuds at the same time constantly. And it's kind of strange. Another one of those story writing things that's not good. For AEW there. I would be up for a Miro versus Malakai Black match any day of the week.
Yes.
Moxley and Yuta versus the Best Friends. I mean, they were kind of telling a story here. I also thought that it was a little bit strange that the Best Friends really hung in there as much as they did, honestly, against Jon Moxley.
Yeah, the whole thing was weird because, I mean, they never really followed up on Yuta leaving the Best Friends to join the Blackpool Combat Club in the first place. So it felt like they were just bringing something back from 3 or 4 months ago.
And
it was a fine match, nothing, but not the biggest fan of just throwing your world champion in pointless matches. You know, the second match in the first hour, it feels beneath him.
Especially when he gets his ass kicked.
Yeah, that was very, very weird. This is not how you want to build your this interim champion before he has his big unification match with the actual real champion. Yeah, I know Moxley likes to wrestle. I mean, he's not doesn't want to be this person who only wrestles on pay-per-views or what have you. But know, his entrance will always fire up a crowd, but... Let's be more selective in how we use him while he's carrying around that supposed interim world championship.
There are definitely ways to put him on TV and even have him within matches, and still not look kind of as bad as he did for this matchup.
I know they want to get Yuta kind of over because he has a pure title defense on the Death Before Dishonor show against Daniel Garcia. Yes, another Black Belt Combat Club versus Jericho Appreciation Society match. Yay.
Oh. Their faction feuds, they just feel like they run forever. And I know that they haven't even really had something of a proper feud at this point, really. But it's good.
No, I mean, it's all about Kingston and Jericho, really. Yeah. The other members really have, which includes, once again, the interim world champion, just seem to be afterthoughts in this whole thing.
Kind of a little bizarre. Now, this is something out of left field here. What did you think of the cake shot on our good friend Josh Mustachio? Oh, I'm sorry, on Mark Sterling.
Very WWE segment. Right down to the celebrity humping, the relatively minor celebrity humping. I'm sorry to the hip hop community, but yeah, not. Once again, he sold the cake shot, and he tried to, you know, pratfall and all that. Just nothing that did much for me there. I'm not really familiar with Kevin Gates. Definitely would rather not be familiar with Tony Nese.
Tony Nese is definitely in the category of, I'm sorry, dude, if you thought you got a bad shake in the WWE, you are not getting any better of a shake in AEW. So... I'm glad that you have a lot of abs. It hasn't done you a whole lot of good, though.
Yeah, no. There's nothing to Tony Nese. There never has been, and never will be. You know, Sterling has nothing really to do since he got kicked out of Jay Cargill's act. Although that was for the best. They didn't really fit well together. Stokely and Jade obviously fit well together. Although I don't like that it seems like she already shows signs of getting annoyed with him and his antics. You know, how she's not, you know, into the idea of Lila Gray being in the group, and so she's literally telling him to shut up and calling him a dumbass and stuff like that. It's, you know, they've barely been together. We shouldn't be doing that yet either.
Agreed on that front. And I will say that just the cake shot itself, that could not have been any more square. Like, that was, to me, one of the best cake shots I've ever seen. Most people tend to...
It was a good cake shot.
You know, I feel like people miss to the left a lot, or, you know, like, I feel like they either go too high, they go too low. Swerve planted that thing square in the middle to, like, really get maximum cakeage on Mark Sterling, and I've got to admit, I was thoroughly impressed, just because, like I said, I feel like cake shots tend to go a little awry sometimes. Because, you're dealing with food.
It was well done, cake shot.
But yeah, everything around it was a little bit strange. Yeah, not familiar with hip hop, and I have no idea who Kevin Gates is. And yeah, I mean, I guess there is something to be said for the fact that he was towering over, you know, multiple people in that segment.
Yeah. Not a good look. I know AEW is less self-conscious about things like that, but they need to be a little more self-conscious about it.
Yeah. I have got to admit, I am thoroughly confused with Luchasaurus seemingly turning on Christian at the drop of a hat.
I mean, either Luchasaurus was playing Christian the whole time, or he's now playing Jungle Boy, and Jungle Boy is going to look like a moron in the next couple in the next week or two.
Yeah,
I think it's going to end up being the latter.
Not a good look for any baby face.
No, it's not going to be a good thing for Jungle Boy. And this whole storyline has, up to this point, been done well. You know, that Christian was able to convince Luchasaurus to take his side in the whole thing. You know, I thought that was good. I thought that was good. I mean, Luchasaurus is a heel heavy for someone. Might be his real calling to extend some life in his career. So, but doing it like this, where there's going to be a swerve and then another swerve that just serves to make the baby face look stupid, not a particularly great storytelling here.
Even during that segment, it kept on feeling like Jungle Boy was going to look like an idiot. Just the way that Luchasaurus even acted during that segment, it just seems like he's going to make the turn, which makes it all the worse.
Yeah.
I mean, I know he's not the faster of the two between him and Jungle Boy. His pursuit of Christian, though, was lackluster at best.
Yeah, no. Jungle Boy's never, you know, once again, he's kind of the pretty boy. He's been in this tag team for the entire, he's gotten his single shots, but once again, as that pure white meat baby face, you know, in whatever he's done from getting, you know, shots and singles, and, you know, obviously in a pure babyface tag team, he's never had to be angry. And he did not do a good job at showing that kind of emotion.
Uh-oh.
He's very much his father, who, his father made an entire career out of having one facial expression.
Oh, man, yeah, and I didn't even really see that facial expression too much.
Yeah, I mean, I like Luke Perry, but yeah, not the most expressive actor who ever walked the face of this earth.
And his
son's kind of following in the footsteps. He kind of has a cool, calm demeanor to him, and he doesn't really break from it. And it's going to be hard for him to really show the emotion necessary to make this work, I think.
I guess it seems like a last item of business here for the most part. From AEW, Ricky Starks, strangely enough, has defended the FTW championship like more frequently in the last month than the rest of his title reign.
It does seem like we're going to build towards and using Dan Harryhausen as the bridge to get there. Hook is going to go against the rest of Team Taz and challenge Ricky Starks for that FTW title and probably win it.
Yeah, like, it's definitely one of those situations where I kind of feel like Ricky Starks is in this. It seems like the internet loves him. It seems like AEW loves him. I still kind of feel like they need to, in the proverbial words, shit or get off the pot. Like,
they're fine as a temporary thing, but I don't like Keith Lee and Swerve Strickland as a more permanent tag team.
Uh-huh.
So I was totally in favor of, well, if it had to, titles had to change, I was more in favor of Starks and Hobbs getting them. Unless you were going to do, which I still understand why they're not going in this direction, having the Young Bucks, unless there's an injury situation or something else we don't know about, having the Young Bucks lose those tag titles so quickly and so abruptly when they haven't done the FDR all or nothing match with all the titles on the line, which seemed like an obvious thing to do, seemed like the obvious direction for All Out.
Yeah.
And now the titles are on another babyface, a different babyface team, and one that's obviously, you know, a thrown together team of two singles wrestlers with nothing better to do, as opposed to something, as opposed to what I consider a real team.
They
don't enter together.
I remember Jeremy saying to me that supposedly the Hardys were supposed to win the championships and not the Bucks, and that obviously got thrown off.
I don't know what you do with the Bucks anymore. It seems like they've outlived their usefulness to AEW at this point.
It is pretty bizarre that they're in an extremely strange spot in their own company.
They are. They seem to be entering Cody territory of just not seemingly just not having a place anymore.
Yeah, like they're not almost old enough to have. Like, they almost need more time to do a Randy Orton-esque revival here that he's had during the pandemic era. Like, they almost kind of need more of a lull period where they're not doing much, and then kind of come back and start wrestling people again. And
maybe they could use a longer break.
Yeah, so I don't.
Because Kenny Omega's going to come back to a very different AEW and new people to work with, and, you know, the obvious Punk feud. So, you know, the Elite guys, I think Omega probably has the brightest future because, let's throw one more topic into it. They have completely whiffed on any follow up for Hangman Page post title reign.
Oh my gosh,
he is off the radar. Like, he is, like someone pointed out today, there's the graphic for Friday's Rampage, and like a teeny tiny part in the bottom, he's in a tag match teaming with John Silver against Butcher and the Blade. It's like, this guy was your world champion a month and a half ago. How the hell is this happening?
Yeah, I don't know. Like, he has had, I feel like he had a little bit of TV time there right after he lost the championship, and then he just dropped off the map after that.
Yes, I mean, they did the convoluted deal to get themselves to Forbidden Door, which I kind of understand because it was I think the whole will he or won't he actually be able to come over with Okada was very real, so they had to do a really clumsy build up to that. But now after that, it's been absolutely nothing. I mean, he's slumming it on Rampage, you know, teaming with the Dark Order again. In seemingly a more permanent fashion, it's not good. And, you know, when you've been to the top of the mountain and they have no plans to bring you back there or anything even second or third tier level to do, I don't know when the Hangman's contract comes up, but maybe that WWE option isn't looking too bad right now.
Yeah, and I do think that at least part of the problem for him does fall into the... Everyone that he probably could wrestle has been injured. Although, I don't know if
but when it comes to Danielson and Cole, he's already wrestled them.
I was almost more for a Danielson match, but I did forget that that was his only title defense?
Two title defenses. No. He made defense against Archer. He defended against Cole twice. He had his title defenses.
Okay.
His reign wasn't a complete waste. I mean, obviously the big moment was him winning it, and then it wasn't maybe the greatest follow through with the reign. But
no,
they seem to have nothing for him. I mean, they've got they've got MJF on ice. They are not really wanting to put him against.
To me, that's another natural feud for Paige is to go against MJF because they haven't really mixed it up too much over the course of AEW, honestly. And it's two of your younger big stars, and like you said, like MJF isn't there to carry through with that part of the feud.
No, he's not there to carry through anything, and MJF was arguably the MVP of AEW's 2022 with this Punk feud and the Wardlow feud, and then they have to do this weird work shoot crap, and there's been no follow-up for nearly 2 months. And so people forget. So yeah, it wasn't a well done. If you're gonna try to screw with people and try to keep people guessing what's real, what isn't, first of all, those things never really work. Second of all, and if they would, this isn't the way you go about it. You still got to remind people that MJF exists, within like 2 months.
Yeah, it kind of makes me think about how much it's just like, oh, the WWE really wants to push Cody Rhodes because they had him come in and do some like I forget which match he made a prediction for on the SummerSlam card.
It's Money in the Bank.
Oh, Money in the Bank. Okay. Oh, yeah. But anyway, yeah. He made a prediction for that. And I mean, that's a way to keep someone on TV without keeping them on TV. You know, obviously there are other ways to do it, but that, yeah, that's one of them. So, but yeah, Adam Page has just not gotten a whole lot of anything.
No, he has not, and there's no excuse for it. There's no excuse for taking someone who, you could argue that his title reign, it was due to come to an end. It's, they weren't at a place where he was going to be like this giant difference maker, and it was only a matter of time before Punk ended up with the title. We knew that. Dating back to Punk's first day in AEW.
Oh, right.
But to not have anything for him, nothing with any of these, multitude of secondary titles or people to feud with. This large roster. He's being thrown in with the increasingly shrinking Dark Order act, which has.
Oh.
When Anna Jay leaves, it's time to turn out the lights.
That's just a gimmick that has really not been pushed, and it was almost strange because it wasn't this week, but wasn't it last week when they were in Buffalo and they brought out Negative One or Rochester possibly.
Rochester, Burley's hometown. They created a nice little moment out of it, but then that's all it was. They quietly let two members' contracts end, so they were down two members anyway. And now, once again, now Anna Jay's left. It's like, this thing doesn't really need to exist anymore in any capacity.
Yeah, a three-person stable of guys that lose all the time is not a good group to have together.
No.
So, anything else to cover before we get out of here?
I don't think so. This was a long show for you and I, so yeah, let's hit.
Well, I will admit, in the Beltane beer department, I saw that this brewery, Dankhouse Brewing, which is out of Newark, Ohio, about 30 minutes east of my house, they are one of my favorites. I saw that they are canning three new beers, and they are being released tomorrow. Since I have been left to my own devices this week, I am planning a trip out to Newark tomorrow evening, and I said, hey, why not during the podcast talk about some Dankhouse Brewing? This was one that it is possible that I gave this to my brother-in-law to drink, who then gave it back to me. Which is kind of funny. I'm not going to argue, though. The Waka in my Air Force Ones is a very delicious IPA that is dry hop with Rewaka and Nelson Sauvin hops. That mostly just gives it a little bit more of a hoppy nose to it. It doesn't really contribute that much to the actual flavor. So the hops used within the beer itself are quite good. I have mentioned that I'm not big on IPAs in general. This is another one, though, that it's kind of leaning towards a New England style IPA, which really doesn't cook the hops almost at all. But still, you can tell that there's a little more depth to the hop flavor than what one would get in a New England IPA. So, very good beer. I am looking forward to trying out the other ones, which I don't think I got a chance to snag last year. So, I am very excited. Dankhouse Brewing, Newark, Ohio. That is the push for this Beltane beer. Anything on your end, sir, that maybe you've had either tonight or within the last week?
No, I have not had anything to drink in the last week.
Oh,
actually.
Well, good for your liver. my recommendation, you can follow me on the Untappd if you want to, and on the Twitter at DeFrango11. He is at StuntCali, at least on the Twitter brand. The brand itself is at StuntGranny. Just on the Twitter. You can download us at any number of locations. Apple is the biggest one, and you can rate and review the podcast there. Other places to download it are Google, Spotify, iHeartRadio, and Stitcher. Have a good night, grandkids.
Later.